Recording in progress.
It's really lovely. We're sort of swapping things with Bodhilila in the way that she's in the space where I was yesterday and pushing some buttons on a computer. And I'm sitting here in front of the shrine. So I'll talk to start with, and then we'll have a period of reflection and period of practice this morning together. So yesterday we had a full day of the retreat, and we had a full day of practice. And some of you might be intercepting the practice with activity and some other commitments. And some of you might have a bit more external spaciousness, so might have the conditions to have that more spacious time around the sessions. So we're all coming to it with different conditions, different settings. We're in different settings. And I thought, different people mention different reasons for coming to this particular retreat, but quite few people mention that they were captured by the theme or by the title at the still point of the turning world. And I really love that image. If you saw the image on publicity, which was chosen by somebody who's not with us anymore, who left our team, Sophie. And I felt like that was one of her last sort of presents to us, that image. And it was a image that had lots of whiteness in it and this kind of branch of wood. And on the end of the wood, there was a bird. And it reminds me of herons or cranes. And I don't know whether you've ever seen a heron or crane, but they're immensely majestic and they can stay still and they can stand with incredible stillness. And in that stillness, there is a beauty. And I had this, it reminded me of thinking of these cranes and herons and kind of seeing them either in nature or sometimes having these images of Japanese art or even Chinese paintings of herons or cranes standing on one leg. And a martial artist, actually I should say I'm a health artist, I was reminded by one of the masters that I sort of follow that unless you put in your martial arts into use and test, you're not really a martial artist, you're more of a health artist practicing. So I'm probably a health artist, but in martial arts there are these forms, and some of the forms imitate particular animals, and one of the forms or one of the sort of ways of practicing is following sort of movements of a crane. And there are lots of forms and postures that imitate stillness of a crane. And I was thinking also about this film where there is a disciple who's training martial arts and a master, really unassuming master who seems to be drunk all the time. But whenever he's demonstrating some martial arts, there is this enormous alertness. And he was showing to one of his disciples how to be fast, how to catch a fish. And there is this moment where you've got a big vase of water or like a bowl of water, and there is a fish. And the master has got incredible stillness, and then there is huge speed in which he just captures the fish. So I think, like with the cranes and herons, you know, there is incredible stillness, and out of that stillness there is aliveness, and there is alertness, and there is incredible agility that can come out of that stillness. So quite a few of you said that you were sort of drawn to this stillness, spaciousness, and contentment. And me and Bodhidila were discussing the theme for the retreat, and we were really thinking what theme to dedicate to the time of the year of the city retreat, when there is a lot of transition taking place, one year coming to an end, another year arising to fruition. And we were kind of looking at different themes, and Bodhidila asked this question, like, what is alive right now? What are you feeling? Or what is it that that courts us in interest at the moment? And I thought at that point there was getting a taste of stillness, spaciousness, simplicity, and contentment. And it's got particular quality of experience. It's got particular quality. And that quality is deeply satisfying. It feels very expansive and inclusive. When one has a glimpse of stillness, spaciousness, simplicity, and contentment, it's actually very inclusive. It allows everything, everyone, to be within, to be part of. So in that way, it's quite boundless. And I feel that having that glimpse, having that taste of stillness, simplicity, spaciousness, contentment, it's an experience of a different way of being in the world. I'm really into visuals, and I particularly love colors, actually flowers as well, but mostly flowers because of their colors. And I don't know whether when you're mixing watercolors, for example, if you put in a particular color, it then the whole other colors get infused by that color. And I feel that with stillness, simplicity, contentment, we can get that quality of consciousness, and our consciousness can get infused by that quality of boundlessness. So it can get this color or flavor of stillness, simplicity, and contentment. So I think what I'm trying to get here at is that if we experience something, if we get a sense or glimpse of something, it can actually help us feel motivated. It can get us a sense of like, I really enjoy that way of being. And it may sort of propel one forward in practicing to expand that, to cultivate that particular quality of experience. So it propels us in a particular direction. It makes us step towards that quality of consciousness. It helps us to motivate or cultivate stillness, simplicity, and contentment. And I think, like, in the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, he was sitting under the tree and he made a commitment. And I love that phrase when he says he's not going to get up even if his blood dries, or if the bones kind of, you know, shatters, if the blood dries, he's not going to move. And for me, that is, in that point, Buddha recognizing that in stillness, something can come out of that. And one has to make that sort of commitment, or one needs to allow and feel enough of motivation and kind of, trust to want to carry through something. So yesterday Bodhilila was talking about, how do we get to that still point? How do we cultivate that way of being? And I think it's worth us looking that one step back, looking at the, you know, what actually motivates us to start with, what helps us, what propels us forward. And with the cultivation, how do we access stillness? Bodhilila mentioned the threefold path yesterday. The threefold path of, I suppose, the threefold path, ethics, meditation and wisdom, being the ingredients for our practice, being the ingredients to accessing stillness. And suppose firstly with meditation, a meditation can allow spaces for us, allow spaces for practicing, for recognizing. So we can deliberately create conditions. And those conditions are just space to sit, or space to stop and listen and witness. You know, all of you coming here on the retreat have created those conditions for yourself. You've created the space to sit down and stop and be able to engage with whatever is happening, listening. So this training is a very important part in our practice. And I was thinking, you know, in different areas, Bodhilila mentioned musicians yesterday, or playing instruments. And with musicians, it's not just about performances. It's actually hours of practice. I find that amazing that, you know, if you're a musician, you will spend 6 hours of your day playing your instrument. Sometimes you are with particular pieces of music for hours, you know, like for 20 minutes you might be playing 2 bars over and over. And in that moment, what's happening is you getting familiar, you familiarizing yourself, and you creating something, you listening. So it's a very active process. I've got this violin on loan. I've had violin on loan for about 30 years. And when Bodhilila spent time with me in my home before Christmas, I said the violin is going to the Czech Republic, it's going to be returned. And Bodhilila said, you can't return your violin. Because when you're practicing, when you've got those hours of practice, it's almost like, well, the way she was talking about is the violin is you. and you are the violin. So something's happened in that relationship with that instrument. And I think it's not like that just for musicians. I think, for example, athletes. Again, athletes slowing down, they training particular aspects. You know, like if you've got sprinters, they will spend entire training, entire sessions, just on setting off from the mark. And it will be going through a particular routine, getting to know their bodies, getting to know their thoughts, sort of habituating in a particular way of being. And I'm also really into climbing, and lately, I think 2021 was all about watching climbers and people in the mountains for me. So there was this climber who did a first ascent of this incredible route that's never been climbed before. So he sort of made the route for the first time. And it took him 19 days to do that. So he was living on the wall in Yosemite National Park. And it took him 19 days. And there was a particular stage which was a very difficult traverse. And he was never able to train and climb across that. And he's been training for about 2 or 3 years. So his preparation, he spent 2 or 3 years on that wall before he deciding to do the entire ascent. And he was there with a partner. So when you're climbing, you might also find somebody else who is equally dedicated and wants to potentially train with you and go to the lengths of staying over enormous period of time doing this. So he found a friend, and this person had real difficulty in traversing that particular stage. So they spent days on there, and it wasn't quite clear whether they would be able to climb over it or not. It was a very tricky situation. So what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, when we meditating, there is this training process, there is this slowing down, there is this getting to know, being with. I think also I was at home in November with my mum, and my mum is really into cooking, and I think she watches cooking program every single day. And when you're watching the chefs on the cooking programs, again, you can see, you know, they've made their dish so many times. They know precisely how ingredients will kind of come together, how they will react, what will happen with them. So they can sort of play with that. So it's all about exploring and discovering and playing. Bodhidharma quoted Paramananda yesterday, and she said, you know, it's not such a thing, there is not such a thing as meditation. There are just meditators. And I thought, I'd go even further. I thought, they're not even meditators. I think they're just people meditating, people in the process, in that process of training, in that process of discovering, exploring. And what we exploring and discovering, we attending to our heart mind. We attending this inner landscape. We getting to know the inner landscape. We getting to know the weather systems within us. We getting to know the underwater currents. The currents of our psyche. Even I would sometimes say the torrents of our psyche, you know, whatever is bubbling. So it's like going underneath, familiarizing ourselves with the terrain, and then learning to be with, learning to be whatever there is that we come across. So it's noticing, it's creating that spaciousness, and lots of it is about expanding ourselves as a container. So creating this vast, vast boundlessness within us that can easily hold whatever comes along. So with the retreat, we're creating particular conditions that are conducive to training and conducive to meditation. So it's got particular form, particular structure, you know, particular space. And the focus is on meditation, on the period of practice, and creating those spaces. And I think this is why with Bodhilila we really decided to focus a bit less on guiding and making that intention of creating more spaces for yourself so you can play, so you can explore, you can notice, and you can be with whatever's coming up for you in that quietness, in that silence of our communal practice, where we are communally with each other, but you've got an opportunity to notice and be with whatever's arising individually. And out of that, insight can arise. It can sort of flow to the surface. It can just come from within. And for me, on the threefold path, I always think wisdom will reveal itself. You know, when I'm thinking about ethics, meditation, and wisdom, I feel like, oh, wisdom, I don't need to worry about that one. It's because if I put effort, if I kind of direct my effort into meditation and into ethics, then the wisdom will take care of itself. The wisdom will have the space to arise. And I think for me, that's quite a lot of letting go. I always pride myself on, I was even drawn to wanting to understand, wanting to have knowledge, wanting to know. And I feel that with time, that brought about lots of letting go. So letting go of searching, looking for words, looking for structures. And in a way, there's this letting go of striving. So, yeah, letting go. And it's important to not think of letting go in that way as blobbing out. It's not blobbing out, it's redirecting effort. It's kind of deciding where to put the effort, where to create the spaces, where to put the energy. And we've been in the realm of Amoghasiddhi, and really the realm of Amoghasiddhi is the realm of energy. But it's kind of energy, the word virya, it's got more of an ethical connotation to it. So it's all about ethical conduct. And with stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I suppose we got that precept, with stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I purify my body. Meditation and mindfulness can be seen as really helpful and beneficial, but with Buddhism, with that raft of the teaching of Buddhist teachings, we've got this offer of going deeper. We've got an offer of delving deeper. In a way, we can become scuba divers. We can scuba dive into our being. And we can train, we can train in ethics. So with stillness, simplicity and contentment, I purify my body. It's one of the precepts or guidelines that we sort of take on to reinforce or create new conditions. And it's all about integration. It allows us to unify energy. I think with Amoghasiddhi, I think on the shrine, you have this double vajra. And I think the double vajra, it's sort of all going in one direction. There is that unification. And when things unify, you've got that still point, the point of stillness. And yeah, so ethics can help us integrate. It can help us look at our conduct. It can help us to, you know, how we go about our lives, how we interact with people, how we are in the world. And whatever arises, we can learn to integrate that. We can learn to kind of take that in our strive. And we can step into situations. I think yesterday we were talking about fear. And when we notice something arising, we can kind of bring that along. So that can help us with that integration. It can help us to achieve that unification that brings us to more stillness, to more simplicity, to more contentment. So I had in mind this story of the Buddha. And the Buddha, he would even, you know, we can practice and notice things. And sometimes we can begin to search for opportunities in which we can practice particular qualities. So, for example, with fear, sometimes we can just kind of see it rising, and then it can, then we can just kind of learn to be with. And sometimes we can kind of go that step further when we begin to seek opportunities. We were talking, both Bodhilila and me, we've got instruments here with us. So we've got the viola and violin, and we were talking about, you know, how fearful it might be for us to play the instruments together, because there is a lot of identity sort of tacked into that. And it's one of those, wow, that's an opportunity to work with fear. Yeah, we can actually play and we can let the fear arise. We can even talk about the fear that arising. So with the Buddha, he was really warned about going to a particular forest, because it was a forest where there was this person who had the mission of killing 100 people and having a trophy of their fingers around his neck. And his name is Angulimala, which is the garland of fingers. So he was operating in this forest, and the Buddha was kind of like, no, I'm just going to go for a walk in that place. So it's him moving towards a situation where one can just practice or see a particular quality, practicing fearlessness in this way. And what happened when he did go on his walk and he was walking in the forest, Angulimala thought, we've got somebody who looks really confident. And he sort of took his sword out and was chasing after the Buddha. And he was pretty fit, strong person, and he just couldn't catch up with the Buddha. And the Buddha sort of felt like he was so still in his walking. He was so mindful in his walking, and this Angulimala just couldn't quite catch up with him. And Angulimala really reinforced the, doubled his efforts and was trying to really run and still couldn't catch up with the Buddha. And finally he said, stop, stop, to the Buddha, stop, monk. And the Buddha said, well, I have stopped. It's you who need to stop. So I have stopped. It's you who need to stop. So we are driven. We're driven by greed, hatred, and delusion. And when we driven by greed, hatred, and delusion, it's very hard to experience contentment. Contentment is really when there is absence of hatred and aversion, when there is absence of craving, when there is necessarily, when there is no attachment. And it's useful to explore source of craving and attachment and just seeing it for what it is. I might say one more thing and then I think it will be time for us to reflect. I was on the 24th, imagine 24th of December, last Friday, so not even a week ago, in the Czech Republic. It's a big day, 24th, it's the Christmas Eve day, and that's probably the equivalent of Christmas Day. And I wake up in the morning and I'm with Bodhilila. Bodhilila is visiting, so she's there. Before we know it, we're talking about the center. Before we know it, we're doing something for the newsletter. And in my mind, there is this, but it's Christmas Eve. You don't work on the Christmas Eve. And then I get a text from a friend who I was supposed to have a walk that day. And she said, oh, I really need help for tomorrow. Instead of a walk, can we do some prep for tomorrow's Christmas lunch? And then again, there was that like, I don't work on a Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve is not, you know, one doesn't work. And I can't quite tell you what suffering this caused me internally. This thought of Christmas Eve means not working. And I think with aversion or with craving, with attachment, it's like, I feel like it's sometimes when we have claws and it's almost like I need to unhook, you know, and kind of undo. Because once I was able to say, Christmas Eve is whatever it is, when I was able to unhook from that attachment, unhook from that idea, actually reality was very different. reality was just fine. But it was that all the layers that we put onto it. So I think with ethics, it's that's where we can work on integration. That's where we can also create contentment, create spaciousness, create simplicity and stillness. So I'd like us to do a period of reflection. And what I'm going to do is drop some questions during a period of reflection. And we'll do that for about 15 minutes. So I would encourage you to find a way of sitting or being for the next 15 minutes. You might want to write, or you might just want to sit and just reflect in your mind. And we'll have sort of three periods of about 5 minutes. Well, I'll drop a little question for us to ponder on. Thing with reflection, it's always nice to start with arriving to our body, just heard lots of words, lots of thoughts, stories. Maybe we can let that settle in. Just turning inwards towards our experience. Right here at this moment. And in the first while, you can maybe recollect moments of stillness. So moments where you felt still. Maybe recollecting that taste, that experience. What was it like? What did it feel like? What was it like in your body? Maybe now we can recollect moments of simplicity, where our experience, our life had moments of simplicity. Maybe we can recollect moments of contentment, So when we had a moment without being pulled or pushed by desire, thrown about, just having that sense of contentment. we can have a little opportunity to maybe share if anything's come out of your reflection, or something that arose in that space. And I think we'll keep the video rolling, the recording rolling. And the video is only for the website, shared by the people who are on this retreat. So if you do speak out, it is recorded. If you prefer not to, then you can always write a message to Patricia and she could read it out. But yeah, it's an opportunity. If you want to share, say things out loud, share it with our community, then just unmute and speak.
Hello, Parinita. It's Kalpana here. First of all, thank you very much for a beautiful talk. For me, at the moment, lots of things happening. My son is recovering from the operation, and I have got my own health problems. A lot of things happening in my mind. But when I came to this retreat, I decided that I'm going to create some positive and peaceful and space for me, stillness in my practice. And yesterday, when we did the session, something beautiful happened to me, that I connected with that stillness. And for that moment, the fear and the confusion and all those negative things of life was disappeared. So this is the beauty of a stillness, when you try to view that space with stillness. You connect with, like you said, that very profound consciousness, which is clear. That is your own mind. You are in Zen, they said, bigger mind. So you see that how fixed things you create for yourself and others. Fix me, I am here, world is there. And when you are free from the delusion, something beautiful comes. So I was so peaceful in that, just sitting, walking, standing, connected with my little sangha. So when you create those, but you need to create those energies, and then you will have the fruits of that, and you will see the truth of your own self, your own body, your own mind, how it works. So it was really, really for me, it was totally stillness, contentment, and simplicity of the life. And that is the Buddha's teaching, that when you are free from delusion, hatred, and all these poisons, you see the world very different eyes, and you don't feel disconnected with the world. You are totally connected with the world. That is the shunyata, that is the emptiness he was trying to teach us. It's not something somewhere we have to go and get it. This is inside us, to see that beauty of ourselves and this other people and the world. So it was really a beautiful, precious moment yesterday for me. So thank you very much for that. And I'm folded hand thanks to my Sangha also, because they give me the support, you know. We are not physically there, but it's still spiritually we are together. And it's such a joy to be on this retreat. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kalpana, for sharing that. Thank you.
Yeah, sitting here. When you said each of the three conditions, I kind of imagine myself in situations. Oh, there's an echo. Has everybody got, sorry. Don't know how to stop that. Anyway, so each of those scenarios, I visualize myself somewhere I was when I felt stillness or simplicity or contentment. And then when I look back at the end, they were a situation where all three actually had come together. So the stillness connected with the contentment and the simplicity very much together. So that's observation that I had. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing that, Sue. Yeah, Pamela, just unmute and speak.
I just noticed before when you were saying simplicity, contentment, stillness, when I kind of pictured this moment, my body always relaxed. Like one image was like being on the beach with the sand just, warming myself and in general women everything, and it was just like relax, stillness, just relax body completely, in a way the mind was open, bright, wide.
Thank you. Think there is that connection to the body, and maybe what I was trying to get at the start when I was talking, that when we get that sense, that quality in our experience, and that vastness and boundlessness, it can have that motivating factor to it, or motivating, driving force to it. Okay, so maybe we'll leave it at that. And I was thinking about us having a little tea break. But then when I say a tea break, it's almost giving this idea that we're going to pause our practice. And I'd like to encourage us to carry on the practice into the tea break, the tea break being the practice in itself. So maybe we should call it tea continuity. So I'd like us to have a tea continuity. And I think it's an opportunity to practice on the go, because often we are in the world and we are often on the go. So it's like practicing when we are in activity, when we are in action. So it's an opportunity to make ourselves a drink. It might not have to be a tea, it might be whatever drink you might want to have, or it might not even be a drink for you. But it's an opportunity to just notice what your mind is doing as you make your way somewhere else in the room, somewhere else in your space. So when we go upstairs, me and Bodhilila, there'll be a bit of negotiation probably over the kettle. So just really being with what's happening in our mind, what's happening in our body as we are going about making a tea or making whatever we might make, even if you go to a loo. And it's an opportunity to practice ethics as well, working on that, you know, seeing whether craving arises, seeing whether, you know, what happens with it, what happens with as you taste a drink, for example, and just enjoy that. Maybe take a seat, look out at the scenery, and just be with what is for a moment. And we're going to meet back in, let's say, 5 to 12, yeah, in 15 minutes. So enjoy your tea continuity. And part of that, part of that is managing transitions, really. And bringing awareness into transition, so then we can have more of a continuity of being. So in the next while, kind of going to carry on in practicing. And what I want to practice to focus on is deep listening. So we'll start with chanting mantra, and we'll chant the Amoghasiddhi mantra. Amoghasiddhi is associated with the senses, with the six senses. And so it's an opportunity to receive sound and be receptive to sound and then respond to that sound. And we'll chant the Amoghasiddhi mantra, and there is that opportunity to listen to the chanting. And because Bodhilila will be sort of responding to my chant, you can do two things. You can be responding to the chanting that you hear, and also simultaneously responding to the voice of Bodhilila and being in communication, in connection with that. So it's that opportunity to really deeply listen to the sound and play with that and be with that and practice with that. And when we stop the mantra chanting, when it fades away, we'll have an opportunity just to sit and listen inwardly. And we can almost kind of change into external stimulus not being important, changing a value. And we can just unhook and observe what's going on inside us, internally. And if there is some kind of dialogue going on, you don't need to be part of that dialogue. you can just see what it is, and you can just see how long it goes on, and you can just see how it comes into being and how it goes, how it ends. And in a way, that's what we were already exploring yesterday with the shunyata, with things not being fixed, coming, arising and passing away. And again, we did that in the evening when we were looking at the three lakshanas and having the reading on the three lakshanas. So when we had that insubstantiality, things not being fixed, so they arise and they pass away. So we'll just have that opportunity to, yeah, from the mantra, having that transition into our inner landscape and just being an observer in that landscape. And towards the end of our sit, I'm going to make a reading. I'm going to read Shapka, which is very much in line of the Heart Sutra. So I'll just read that and we'll have another 5 or 10 minutes of sit following that reading, and that will bring us to the end of the morning session. So, yeah, if you want to make the transition, prepare your body for the next practice. Om namo gosiriya hum 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 Om
Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om Om Namo Bhagavate Om
All appearances are vast openness, blissful and utterly free. With a free, happy mind, I sing this song of joy. When one looks towards one's own mind, the root of all phenomena, there is nothing but vivid emptiness. Nothing concrete there to be taken as real. It is present as transparent, utter openness, without outside, without inside, and all pervasiveness, without boundary and without direction. The wide open expanse of the view, the true condition of mind, is like the sky, like space, without center, without edge, without goal. Dissolving into the expanse of emptiness that has no limits and no boundary. Everything I see, everything I hear, my own mind and the sky all merge. In the absolute expanse of awareness, all things are blended into that single taste. But relatively, each and every phenomenon is distinctly, clearly seen. Wondrous. So this takes us to a close of this particular practice. And now you'll be the painters who made your own form for the next couple of hours, in which you can carry on with your practice in the circumstances and conditions in your own spaces. And maybe you can have that thought of continuity, and that we're all about going our ways for the next couple of hours. Across the world, I think we've got some people from different cities, from different countries. And if you haven't been part of a group yesterday, you're welcome to come at 4 o'clock still to join us for groups. We'll have groups today, and tomorrow we'll have been more quietness without groups. So do come along. If that will be supportive for your practice in terms of connecting with others. So that's at 4 o'clock, and then at 4:30 we'll have a sesshin practice, just cultivating stillness, simplicity and contentment. So go well, and feel free to unmute as well.